get this, right? I was absolutely staggered, right? Sometimes, you know, when you read a newspaper headline and it feels like it's just broken your nose. This was one of those ones. And so there's a campaign now. I cannot believe there has to be a campaign for this, but there does. There's a campaign now to make sure that any male rape suspect or someone who's accused of rape, an alleged rapist, cannot identify as a woman and then be processed as a woman, presumably ending up in a woman's prison. I can't believe we have to say this, but we do. It's happening in Scotland. Susan Smith is on the line, co-director of For Women Scotland. Great to have you on board, Susan. Thank you for this. Can you just run me through, really, exactly what's going on north of the border there and what you're doing to try to, I suppose, you know, stop this from happening?
Yeah, so this particular petition is one that's been started by Murray Blackburn McKenzie, who are a policy unit here in Scotland. They're made up of a criminologist and two former very senior civil servants, and they're very concerned about the impact of data collection and how we analyse these sorts of crimes. So they've started this petition, which people can find if they Google Scottish petitions collecting signatures. And it's just to go back to the Scottish government to say, please, can you look at this? Because this has been going on for a couple of years now, that MSPs, especially Joan McAlpine and Joanne Lamont, have raised concerns with the Justice Secretary about how the police are reporting and recording crime, and nothing seems to have been done about it. What FOIs revealed, because Murray Blackburn McKenzie did these FOIs to the police, and it was quite an extraordinary quote that came back from the police, so I don't know if I should just read this out.
Yeah, just do it. Just go for it. Yeah, absolutely. It's important stuff.
It said, if the male who self-identifies as a woman were to attempt or to penetrate the vagina, anus or mouth of a victim with their penis, Police Scotland would record this as attempted rape or rape, and the male who self-identifies as a woman would be expected to be recorded as a female on relevant police systems.
I mean, the mind boggles. The mind boggles, doesn't it, Susan?
It does. I mean, you know, I think people will say this is scaremongering or it's only in it at the extremes, but the issue that we have and that MBM have is that going forward, this could materially affect how we look at prisons, how we look at programs, how we analyse what is going on. We've already seen, you know, reports. I think there was a BBC File on 4 programme a while back that talked about an explosion in female sex offenders. Now, if there genuinely is an explosion in female sex offenders, we need to know that. We need to know what is happening, and we need to think about how we can deal with that. If there isn't, we also need to think about what else we're dealing with and how else we approach these
Is there a bit of a hypocrisy here, I suppose, in the sense of a lot of political parties are tripping over themselves to go on about how much they respect women. I mean, Boris Johnson yesterday, didn't he? He said we want to build back a more feminine world, for example. Talking about women's rights and female empowerment and all of that. And then at the same, so the SNP are massive on this as well. Humza Yousaf, the Justice Secretary up there, is big on it. Nicola Sturgeon, huge on it. And then at the same time, you've got a policy like this, which I would argue actively endangers women. I don't understand how they square that, Susan.
No, I think that, you know, fundamentally, if you are unable to define what you are talking about, if you're talking about men or women, then you can't talk about rights, you can't talk about safeguards, you can't talk about programmes. And the other thing that it comes down to is a lot of these ideas about sex and gender, when people say they're talking about gender, what they're really talking about are stereotypes. And of course, those are very harmful for men and for women, this idea that men have to behave a certain way to be men and women have to behave a certain way to be women. Those are the things that especially women's rights activists have spent a century trying to undo all those ideas about what makes a man and what makes a woman. And now we're being told that this is actually intrinsic and this is what men and women are supposed to be and behave like. And it is, you really can't talk about all the language that goes on about toxic masculinity or feminizing society if you are really just dealing with stereotypes. You're not actually dealing with programs that to help the people you're claiming.
I'm not being funny, but shouldn't the priority in cases like this be the victim, alleged victim, whatever, as opposed to whether or not the alleged perpetrator is offended, which, by the way, I would hugely question whether or not it's true, we're offended about what gender we're calling them. I mean, are we losing sight of who we're supposed to be protecting here, do you think, Susan?
Yeah, I think to an extent we are. I mean, that doesn't mean that police and the courts can't treat suspects with dignity and they can't treat them sensitively.
Yeah.
That's very important because they have human rights too, and we're not wanting people to feel harassed or abused by the system. But yes, there should be a focus on the victim and what has happened, and it has already happened in the case of Maria McLaughlin, who was attacked by an individual who identified as a woman but was actually male. And Maria was told during the court, the trial, to refer to her assailant as she and as a woman. And because she didn't want to do that, she was, the judge took a harder view of her and a more lenient view of the assailant.
It just shouldn't even be... we're losing sight of the actual issue. You've got someone there who was sexually assaulted. That's the issue. That's why we're all here. That's why we're in court. What she decides to call the individual who allegedly or did, attack her, is bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers. It doesn't matter. It should be an irrelevance. Now, what would your message be to the Justice Minister in Scotland now? What if you had him in the room with you right now, Susan? What would you say to him about this specific issue? If you're just joining us, it is the issue that men who are accused of rape or do rape women can choose to self-identify as women, presumably then go into a women's prison. I mean, there have been cases of that. I don't know if it happens every time. Susan, Humza Yousaf is in front of you right now. What are you going to say to him?
Well, it's not Humza Yousaf anymore, actually.
Oh.
I think the real message is, what are they trying to achieve by this? Who are they helping? Because from what we can see, they are not helping anyone. Everybody knows that, and this is why I think MBM went for rape, because it matters across all sexual offences, but rape does require male anatomy. So they're not helping the perpetrators by allowing them this fiction, because we know that they're still male, and they're certainly not helping the victims. But on the other hand, this can do incredible harm going forward, incredible harm to statistics, incredible harm to programs, incredible harm in trust, both in the police and the politicians who have been responsible for this.
Absolutely. Yes, sorry, you're absolutely right. Of course, Humza Yousaf is no longer the Justice Secretary in Scotland. The reason why I made that mistake was because he used to be, and also the picture of the on the article that I'm looking at has got a massive picture of Humza Yousaf at the top of it, which is why I made that error.
He obviously was behind bringing in the hate crime bill, and one of the things that we said at committee, and Lucy from Murray Blackburn Mackenzie said at committee, was we pointed out what would happen to a woman who perhaps was in court and there was the rapist who identified as a woman. Would she be forced to call this person, she or her, at the risk of being accused of a hate crime? And he said no. But that is something else we really want the Justice Secretary to address, because they promised that they would put explanatory notes on the hate crime bill to say that this sort of thing would not happen, but we've not heard back. And I would say, people might claim that this is scaremongering, that this will never happen, but I would point to Norway, where they brought in self-ID in June 2016, and between 2015 and 2017, the number of women who were accused of rape increased by over 300%.
Right. So, go figure, obviously.
It clearly happens. And then, of course, in Norway, because it's self-ID and because you can't question, you can't actually tease out, even though it's, you know that these will be male people because it's rape, but you can't tease that out. So then it goes on to all the other offences. So you've no real way of knowing who's in this mix. And they have hate crime law that puts another layer on top of it, that people who challenge it, people who say this is wrong, or people risk facing some kind of hate crime prosecution. So all these things are obscuring decent data collection, and they're making... they're not helping women, and I don't think, you know, this isn't helping trans people either, because this is allowing violent offenders to exploit these loopholes.
I don't think it helps anyone, Susan. I don't think... I think the only person that it does help, actually, the only person it does help is all too often, I think, the actual criminal, and that's something that we should maybe be using as a barometer. Is this a good idea? Is this a good policy? Who is this really helping? If the answer is the criminal, or the alleged criminal, then surely that's not fit for purpose. Susan Smith, thank you so much for making the time for us. A really important issue here on Talk Radio, and glad to have your expertise to cover it. Just if you are listening to us, then rape